Hello again, this is Bob Patterson, publisher of Street Photography Magazine, and welcome to the Featured Photography Magazine for September 2019. And with me today, as usual, is our editor, Ashley Hunsberger. Ashley, what's new?
Hey, Bob. Glad to be here. Not too much is new. Traveling a bit, but I guess that's normal.
Nothing new. Yeah, I haven't talked to you in about 2 months.
Has it been that
six
long?
6 weeks, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. A little escape to Europe.
I know. You went to Europe.
It was beautiful. It was different than what I expected, which was great. And we visited Paris, which is wonderful for walking around and taking pictures. And then we visited a place called Annecy, which was in the French Alps. And that was amazing. So, had a great time.
Anyway, our guest this month is Shlomi Amiga. He is our feature photographer. Shlomi is he's a commercial and editorial photographer from Toronto, Canada. This must be a Canadian year. We've had a number of folks from Canada. Toronto, one of my very favorite cities. You live in a cool place there, Shlomi. So, anyway, Shlomi's an interesting cat. He's an Israeli by birth, a Canadian by choice, I assume. I don't think they dragged you in there, did they? But he's kind of interesting when you come from two places like that. Because I want to talk about this because you're an insider of both places, but you're also an outsider too. And I want to ask you some questions about how that affects your photography. But anyway, welcome, Shlomi.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, doing good.
Good, good. Thanks for having me. Hey, Ashley, how are you?
Hi.
Are you back there still?
I'm still here.
Nice.
She's there. She might drop off to sleep.
Yeah. Or a quick trip to Europe again.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. So, Shlomi, to get started, why don't you tell us, how'd you get into street photography? I mean, you're a commercial photographer, but how'd you get into street photography, and how does that play into everything else you're doing?
Yeah, I think that, the funny thing is that I think that I didn't get into street photography. Street photography got into me. The funny way is, as someone who's, I've always been an observer since I was a kid, I think I always liked to look at things, and people watching is a bit more of an aggressive way to say it, but I always like to look around, and life on the street is something that is so fascinating when you think about how little we are as individuals and what makes the world move around is the streets. Everything is happening. People moving, going to work, coming back, doing whatever. And there's always stuff happening. So I think that in a way, street photography got to me before I realized that I should pick up a camera and actually start shooting.
I think it's so important to be an observer first. Otherwise, you're just doing spray and pray, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's true. So for me, the approach with street photography is just, there was a point in time where I decided I want to capture those moments that I, saw on the street and made me laugh or made me think or made me do whatever. But first started as something that was a bit more, natural to who I am. And then only after that, I picked up the camera and started shooting.
Was there a specific moment that made you pick up the camera?
I think specifically with street photography, probably not. But when I served in the army, in the Israeli army, when I was in my late teens into my early 20s, I played around with some cameras and photographed some of what we were doing. I was a dog trainer in the army, so I was photographing the dogs. Ooh. Yeah. So I think, one day we're training the dogs, and my commander gave me his old SLR camera and asked me to take pictures. And it's actually a funny story, but you know, I started shooting, but the actual sound of the shutter and the mechanical experience drew me in, which is, you know, it has nothing to do with visual experience, more like just physical experience. So I started, you know, shooting with the camera, and I really enjoyed the mechanical aspect of it. And then from that progressed, like, you know, more experimenting and eventually making this, you know, a passion, profession, way of life. Yeah. Not very traditional, not the kind of guy, you know, who got his first camera from his dad when he was five.
Yeah.
I don't have any romantic stories like that, unfortunately. No.
It's still an interesting fusion of things that drew your attention, that drew you in. You know, you were an observer first, and then you liked the mechanical aspect of the camera, but that was just the perfect mix for you then.
Yeah, and you know what's funny, guys? I look at my 3.5-year-old now, who is named after a street photographer, by the way.
Really?
Oh, really?
His name is Irwitt.
Aww.
Oh, yeah. Really? Oh, that's
cool.
Yeah,
his name is Irwitt. And I look at him now, and I see the way he looks at things around him. And I just, like, you know, I think about it, and I look at him, and I say, here it is, you know? Here it is, so early, you just look around, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, everything is new to them, and they're just taking it all in, and they're processing all this information.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can't remember those days of our lives, but it's so interesting to watch them go through that.
Yeah, and, you know, some kids, obviously he's three, so life is one big party. But some some kids, you know, they don't stop and look around. Some kids are like, you know, they do whatever. But I really see that in him. He really will stop and, like, try to figure it out, look at what people are doing, and really take a step back and just watch, which is really fascinating.
And he must get that from you.
Who knows, Bob? That's what my wife always says.
Yeah.
The observers.
Yeah, that's a good point. So how did you get into commercial photography? So many people ask us, you know, how can I make money with my photography? Can I make a living with this? You know, it's definitely not easy, as you know. But, I mean, so how did you get on that career track to where you could actually, you know, make a living doing something most people can only dream about?
Right. I think, I definitely feel, you know, I'm very happy that this, you know, I am able to do what I love. But, I think it's a combination of different things. The first one would be the fact that I know how to teach myself things. So I taught myself photography, and, you know, I know how to be disciplined and find different streams to learn about something. So, you know, in this case, photography, I taught myself everything I needed to know. And in terms of how I actually started working in photography, I think that, you know, I was so passionate about basically shooting everything that I started photographing friends and, you know, things, and really the full scope. And then people started asking me to do, you know, more and more work for them. Take picture of me doing this. I need a picture for that. And to the point, you know, I think that a lot of people can relate to this, but to the point that I was like, you know, doing a lot of this, like, you know, photo work for people, maybe I should start charging money. So it got to the point where I, you know, I thought there's some kind of a demand, so I must be doing something okay. And maybe it's time to, you know, I'm already spending all this time doing this. It needs to start making sense financially as well. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, the combining passion and work is, like, you know, I couldn't ask for anything else other than that. But yeah, it's really constant hustle trying to find clients, maintain clients, come up with new work, shoot things that, you know, you don't get paid for, so you can inspire people to hire you.
That freelance life.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Right?
And a lot of people think that, you know, a lot of people think that it's romantic. It's not very romantic. Yeah, it can be really fun, but it's freelance life.
It's hard work.
It's very hard work. But I think that the last thing that really helped me with that is my people skills. I like to be around people. I think I'm pretty easy to work with. So I think that, you know, you could, everybody can, not everybody, but a lot of people can shoot, right? But I think that if you give your client good experiences, they'll come back and, you know, they'll hire you again, or they'll tell their associates about you, or their, you know, their friends. And this way you can get more and more work. But it's, I think people skills is important.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. This is, doesn't have anything to do with photography, mm-hmm. but it's just something I'm interested in. In Canada, you have government health care.
Yeah.
In the U.S., we don't. And it's quite expensive.
Yeah.
Ashley can attest to that. It seems that countries that have healthcare that's easily available, readily available, mm-hmm. spawn more entrepreneurs nowadays than our country, where it just costs so much to care for your family that you almost have to have a job to have decent care. Do you see a lot of entrepreneurial people like yourself in your area?
Yeah, I mean, Toronto is just, it's just such an incredibly, I don't even know how to, it's like, there's so many talented people in Toronto, and so many people are entrepreneurs in you know, and a lot of different industries. And I can understand what you're saying about the healthcare, because it's, you know, it gives people more, first of all, financial freedom, mm-hmm. but also people don't have to have that kind of concern kind of like haunting them as they try to do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And Toronto is just full of people, the entrepreneurs and creatives, and it's just, you know, you just throw a rock and you'll probably hit some incredible, like, you know, artist or like whatever kind of like entrepreneur or someone who's, you know, it really is a very creative place.
On the flip side, your taxes are no fun.
No. They're no fun, no.
I would like to dive into one of your projects, if that's possible. Sure. Yeah. So, please. I was really fascinated by Honest Ed, because I felt really creeped out by those photos.
Yeah, that's great. I'm happy you were able to feel that, because if you were actually ever in that space, you probably get the same feeling. So
I'm like, I think I would have left pretty quickly. Yeah. I don't know. This amazing project was born out of it.
No, I don't know if you can leave. This place was designed, this place was a landmark in Toronto. This guy, Ed Mervish, I think when it was torn down, it was almost 70 years old. And it's basically a department store that was, again, like very famous department store in Toronto. And Ed Mervish in general was, you know, he was a very interesting person. You should look into him. But he also, you know, his family owns all the real estate down on King Street, which is in downtown Toronto, and a bunch of theaters. And they did a lot for Toronto culture, I guess, in the I don't know, the 1950s or something like that. But in any case, this department store is fascinating. It's, you know, you can't get out of there even if you wanted to as a first-time visitor, because it's like a maze. It's so such a complicated space to navigate, and it had everything in it. it's just the most random compilation of goods that you can purchase, and things that you would never ever use but still were up for sale. And they did a lot of good things. For example, once a year they were handing out free turkeys for Thanksgiving, for people who could not afford buying a turkey. And the line of people was just like go around the building, which is basically a street block. So they did a lot of things, you know, a lot of good things for the you know, the community, the people of Toronto. But then, you know, a few years ago, they tore it down and they built condos there, of course, as this is like a theme here in Toronto. The condos are, you know, going up, and just, you know, I was very disappointed with this when this happened, because this was a special place. that I spent a lot of time in when I just moved to Canada.
Where was it? How do you feel about that?
Sorry, Bob?
Where was it?
It was on Bloor and Bloor Street and Bathurst Street. So it's in a neighborhood called the Annex,
okay,
which was an old Jewish neighborhood in Toronto. So yeah, it was.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can see from the photos, it's there was a lot of random stuff in there, and it
I mean, I'm like going through, and I'm like, it's all the little slogans and everything are a little weird, and then it seems like you ended up in some scary basement, and
and there was a barber shop in there,
just random,
and a dentist. So there was a lot of stuff in there that you would never,
a dentist.
You know. Yeah, there was. So this, you know, you saw the basement. Those are photos from a feature piece I shot for a magazine, a Toronto magazine, a few years ago. So I did get a tour inside, into the insides of the buildings, the offices and the basements and stuff like that. So I was able to see some of that. But the store itself is already enough. If you want, you can get the full experience just going to the store. You can see all the photos, and it's just. A very random spot.
And that's fascinating. That I think that makes this project even more valuable because it no longer exists.
Yeah.
And years down the road, I think, you know, more and more people will revisit these photos, which, you know, I'm hoping that's going to bring some fond memories of the place.
You know, one thing I really like about this project is that so many people just say there's nothing to shoot. You know, I've lived in this neighborhood my whole life. I'm just tired of it. But I think any town or any place has some quirky thing that's unique to that area.
Yeah.
That you can go and document it.
Absolutely. And
this Honest Ed's is a great example. Now, of course, Toronto is a giant city and there's many places to shoot on the street.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing like this anywhere else in the world. No, anywhere now since it's gone.
Yeah, and you know what was the thing about this place? You could have walked there every single day and find something to shoot. Because not only it was random in the way it was, you know, built and designed and all of that stuff, but it also, you know, attracted very interesting people, right? So the crowd that was often, you know, in that space, along with the space, it was a lot of times it was almost theatrical, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, as a photographer, you don't really need anything more than that to get inspired, especially as a street photographer.
I mean, it's like a department store, but it's a circus at the same time.
It's, you know what,
it's actually amazing.
I might actually start using that. I'll credit you.
Take
you
it.
It's very accurate. It was very much like, yeah.
Yeah, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, that's Las Vegas.
Right. Because it's just kitschy, right? It's like very...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over the place. And
I've got a question for you. And it doesn't have anything to do with street photography, but it's your portraiture.
Mm-hmm.
You do some really interesting and unique portraits.
Thank you.
And to me, one of the most exciting aspects of street photography is shooting street portraits. And shooting portraits is one of my favorite things, you know, in addition to street photography and other things. But you just seem to bring out just these unique aspects of your subjects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's so easy just to have someone sit down and you take their picture.
Right.
But these aren't pictures. These are portraits. So how do you bring this out of people?
That's a great question, Bob. Thanks for asking, because I always blabber about that to anybody who's willing to you know, take my lectures about portraiture. Yeah, to me, it's like, you know, it's all about the connection. So when I am scheduled to photograph somebody, if it's for, you know, 10 minutes or an hour, I probably invest most of the time in just working on the connection between myself and the subject. So let's say I'll have half an hour to photograph somebody. Most of that time will probably be spent chatting. And, you know, it's not so much about like it's not so much about it. There's, you know, it is about making the subject comfortable, but there's a lot in portraiture and great portraiture that, you know, is not about that. It's about just photographing the subject as it is, even if the subject is uncomfortable, you know, like that famous Yusuf Karsh portrait, right? So for me, it's like trying to make a connection, have a conversation, and draw from that conversation. For example, I have a photograph of a Toronto musician. His name is Rehan Dalal, and he has, what is it, like 4 pairs of glasses on his face.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah, and if, for example, with him, it all comes out of conversation. So we're chatting during our shoot, and he told me about his obsession of glasses and how many he has. And I said, you know, like, did you bring some? He's like, yeah, I have a ton. Like for the shoot, he brought like so many. So I take that and I work with that, because for me, portraits are, you know, there's a huge storytelling aspect to them. And if I can tell a story about my subject in one image, one portrait, I've achieved my goal. So for him, for his portrait, I said, you know, why don't you just put all of them on and we'll see what it looks like, what we can work with, what we can get. So that's a pretty good example. But yeah, I really try to make a connection with the subjects. If I know them already or if I just met them, to just bring something extra to the portrait that is not just, like you said, Bob, somebody sitting there and, you know, trying to look good, you know?
Yeah. And you put them in some situations that look pretty uncomfortable at times.
Oh, yeah.
Someone laying on the ground, or this guy James sitting on a stack of about 10 boxes.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder how he got up there in the first place. But you know.
I don't even know if I can remember that, but he made it up there, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. For me, it's like, you know, it's I don't get excited by just photos of people. I need to have layers in photographs. Mm-hmm. In general, I just like, I need to be able to engage with the image, and I want my viewers to do the same. So if, you know, if I can create something that will make the viewer question the situation or laugh, smile, think about something that happened to him that is similar, relate to it in some way, that's what I like to do. And James, he probably got up there like somehow. He's safe though. I just want you to know he's safe. He's a photographer, which is like, you know, it's just such a fun thing sometimes to work with photographers, because you can just say to them like, let's not make something boring, you know, let's push this and see what we can get, and they can help you with that.
A stack of boxes for you.
Yeah, the Apple box. Why else would you have them in the studio?
I think the most important thing is you got these people to do this. And like you say, sometimes you only have 10 minutes or 30 minutes with somebody. And in that short period of time, you get them to do something that's risky and uncomfortable. And that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think the goal is to make them see the value in it. Mm-hmm. So you kind of talk them into why they... How do I make this uncomfortable situation comfortable for them? Because, for example, James on the Apple boxes, I think that at some point he was already pretty comfortable up there. But it was mostly getting him comfortable with the idea, I think. That's what I try to work with people on and get them to understand. Because, you know, as photographers, when you photograph a subject who has nothing to do with visual arts, you can try to explain to them what you're going for, but sometimes it sounds so random that you may as well not do that at all. And that kind of circles back to, you know, ideas of trust and how do you work with someone and make them feel like they're in good hands and what you're doing is going to look incredible and going to be interesting. It's really such a balancing act to be able to do that.
So if you had a job to photograph the chairman of a bank, you know, biggest bank in Toronto.
Yeah.
And they give you 10 minutes with them. Would you go out on a limb with that guy or woman and try to get them to do something unusual?
Well, you know, yes, but I think the short answer is yes. But I think, Bob, what I would do is I had 10 minutes. I'd probably spend 7 minutes getting the photos that I know will satisfy the art director, the creative director. Then I'll take 3 minutes to take photos that I will still send to the creative director and make them think about it and say, like, wow, I like this guy. And, you know, like, anybody can shoot the first 7 minutes type portraits. But, you know, like, why don't we use that? Because it's just a bit more exciting that just another photo of, like, a CEO of a bank, you know.
Yeah, doing handstands or something.
Yeah, and this is, like, kind of, again, like, trying to balance, give the client options, which is, I think, always a good idea. Like, I never want to be in a situation where, like, I just do what I want to do, and then the person is disappointed, the client is disappointed, and I never get hired again, right? Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
It's almost like, you know, here's a little bit of that, a little bit of this, and, you know, this is my direction, this may be your direction, but who knows? Pick the best one. But I definitely take some time to take a risk. And a lot of times when I do stuff like that when I photograph people and take a risk, I'm completely transparent with them. I just, before we do anything, I say, let's try this. It may be a total failure, but, you know, if it works, it could be unusual and incredible. And people like that because nobody wants to be like everybody else, right?
I think that's a great angle to take because, especially now, because nowadays, everybody has a camera. Everybody takes portraits of every little event in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like right now they're all starting to look the same. These, you know, your pregnancy portraits, your family
portraits.
People
follow trends. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, they all kind of look the same. So this is refreshing, your take on portraiture.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see many street portraits in your portfolios.
No. No, I'm not really, when it comes to street photography, I enjoy, believe it or not, just keeping it 100% candid. You know, I do have interactions and, you know, with people on the street, but more often than not, it's kind of like below the radar kind of shooting.
That said, do you draw inspiration from street photography in your portraiture work?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that obviously subconsciously a lot of what I do relates to each other. But when I do portraiture, a lot of times instead of giving directions to the subject 100% of the time, I try to create situations in which the subject is free to do something and just be in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I will try to capture a candid moment. Obviously it's more planned, but it's still within that planned situation. It's still a candid moment. So that's stuff that, you know, very much inspired by street photography. I feel that urge to get something that is a bit less perfect and, planned, you know, and it's a bit more organic and authentic and just a bit more raw. Right.
Yeah.
I was thinking about what Bob just said about how some of your subjects in your portraiture seem like they're in uncomfortable situations, which I didn't catch that when I looked at the images. I felt like people seemed comfortable, but maybe if
they
are in a slightly uncomfortable situation, it's harder to hide your true self.
Yeah.
Because you put on a face when you're, oh, I'm going to get my portrait taken.
Yeah, it's true.
But if you're in an uncomfortable situation, it's hard to hide the real you.
Yeah, and then things just kind of come out, which, you know, different things come out, and it's just, to me, it gets a bit more exciting.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
to do that in only a few minutes or half hours.
Sometimes, Bob, maybe like 15 seconds. I was once sent to photograph Marina Abramović, the performance artist. Do you know her?
No, I'm afraid not. Annie.
Pretty famous. But I was sent to photograph her, and it was one of those situations where I came up to her agent and said, or manager or whatever, and said, hey, I'm from this and that magazine. I'm here to photograph Marina. And she turned around and she said, okay. And I was just, I had to photograph there on the spot. I probably had about 10 seconds to make something happen. So that happens too. And like, you know, it's very difficult to get something exciting out of those portraits, but you gotta work with what you have. And that goes back to commercial photography. You know, it's not always, you know, it doesn't always go the way you want it to go. But sometimes you just have to get something. Yeah.
Yeah, you do. Hey, you weren't even being paid for that one, I'm sure, but you do have to walk away with something. It's your job.
Yeah, exactly. And you need to know that, you know, you win some and you lose some, you know. Sometimes you get something great. You know, other times I'll go out with my, you know, with my camera and walk the streets for about 5 hours and come back with nothing. Like nothing that I'm happy to use, zero.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of it. And that's also like what's fun about it. It's a challenge. Nothing is guaranteed. So you always have to work hard.
Yeah, you sure do. Talk about some of your other work. I'm very interested in your project, Salt and Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do make an interesting point. I mean, you come from Israel, you know, your formative years were there, then you moved to Canada. And sometimes I think, you know, when you come from one place and you go to another, you're never really part of both anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of times it's part of you, but, you know, you've been gone from Israel for 10 years, you know, so you go back and things have changed and, you know, people have moved on. And then in Toronto, you're like, still like a new guy, you know, you weren't raised
sure.
there.
Yeah.
And so how does that affect your photography? How does it actually help it?
Well, it's an interesting question because I think this is something that I'm still always learning about. And, you know, when I put together this project, which is really a compilation of photographs that I took in Israel since I left, which was in December of 2008. And it's like, you know, only I would say like 8 years later, I started looking at these photos and I said, there's something about them that is, you know, the mm-hmm. perspective or the subject matter that is, I know I wouldn't do that if I lived there. Or like, what am I, you know, a lot of my shooting, I think a lot of my photographs that I take and my subject matters and the moments that I catch, a lot of them are quick, but then, you know, there's a lot of things that happen subconsciously, I believe, because I circle back to the photos years later on the computer and I look at them and I say, okay, that's really interesting. Why did I do that? What did that mean to me that moment? How did it make me feel? And how does it make me feel now? So looking back at those photos, I started questioning that whole thing, exactly what you said about not, you know, being a stranger there and being a bit of a stranger here. And it's funny. You know, it's a funny feeling. So yeah, that project, a lot, like most of it is about just the perspective.
Yeah, being a stranger gives you fresh eyes.
It does, but for me, I'm also torn between being a stranger but not being a stranger. So
sure.
A lot of these photos are, you know, I think, and this project in general is about me not like living away from my family and living away from my hometown, my country, the place I grew up in, and what does that mean to me? And, you know, how do I approach photography when I'm there? Is it fair to approach photography like that? Because, you know, photos, when you see photos, when you think about photography and Israel, people always think about conflict when they think about Israel. But for me, these are photos of a place that I left behind, not entirely, but it's also a way for me to deal with that idea that, you know, I'm not there anymore. My family's there. And, you know, how do I feel about that place?
What do these images reveal to you? What, like, about your feelings about Israel?
I think there are a lot of keywords that I can use here, but there really is a combination of feelings, you know, like I miss that place, but on the other hand, I don't feel like I want to go back and live there anytime in the future. There's a lot of nostalgic things that I think I capture that maybe are very far removed from reality, and they're just maybe illusions because they're captured in a photograph form. So maybe in a sense also a lot of romanticizing, a balance between romanticizing and criticizing, I would say, jumping between those two back and forth. Yeah. Which is hard for me to say criticizing because, like, you know, who am I to criticize, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just an individual. I can't. It's a lot. But if I had to explain it like that, that is how I feel about it internally. And it'll probably always be like that. Even if I don't, you know, it's not like, you know, when I shoot street photography, I'm drawn to certain moments and situations most of the time without even knowing why. And then I need to sit down and think about it and figure it out with myself. So in this case, yeah, there's more layers to it because of, you know, the geography and the history and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's obvious you capture things pretty quickly.
Yes, very quickly. I don't even focus my camera, Bob.
Yeah, I can imagine. Especially Dumb Luck, obviously, is a great example of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably saw these things subconsciously in a lot of cases because it happened so fast.
Yes, I agree. Most of this stuff is not very, it's very instinctive.
Yeah. So what are you shooting with on the street versus in the studio?
On the street, I have a little camera, the Fuji X100T.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I shoot it on the street, I shoot it with hyperfocal lens. So I don't focus the camera at all. I just, if I need to shoot something, I just pick it up and sometimes not even pick it up to my face. And I just shoot. So it's the quickest way for me to get a shot that is in focus of a moment that will be gone and, you know. So
0.5 seconds.
And so when you're out there on the street with that fixed 35mm equivalent lens, do you ever wish you had a 28 or a 24 or something?
The
do you
only,
feel restricted by it?
That's a great question.
I shoot with the Fuji too. That's why I'm asking.
Well, the only thing, I don't feel restricted because if you gave me one choice to have for a camera lens, I would always choose a 35.
Uh-huh.
But the only reason I love 28 is because of Gary Winogrand and the way he photographed things with the 28 and what kind of perspective that gives you and what it forces you, where it forces you to be as the photographer. So whenever I think about an alternative to the 35, I think about Gary. and I think about how he was the person who made that 28mm focal length, you know, so huge in street photography. I'm happy with that camera. It's like, you know, I put it in my pocket, which is the biggest thing. I don't have to worry about it. For studio work, I have Fuji as well. X-T2, which I can change lenses and like get a variety of, you know, focal lengths and stuff like that.
Sure.
I also shoot, occasionally I shoot medium format, analog in the studio, and just for family stuff, I have my Leica M6, which I have a great story about that if you want to know.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. My Leica M6 is that's a good story. I got it from a photographer. His name is David. I didn't get it from him. I got it from somebody who bought it from him. But his name is David Rubinger, who was a very famous Israeli photographer. Who over the years photographed wars and presidents, was personal photographer of prime ministers, and was just that Leica camera had seen a lot of things. So I got that. He owned that. So when I was able to, I had an opportunity to buy that. I had my dad in Israel make the purchase for me, and I went there to get it.
Wow.
Or sorry, somebody brought it. A friend brought it over. But that camera means a lot to me. So I shoot like family stuff with it, but I don't abuse it. I don't abuse it too much because it's more of a historical, you know, it has more historical value to me than photographic value.
So do you have a 35 on that one?
I have a 35 on that one, and I also have a 50 on that, of course, Bob.
Okay.
And I have a 50 on that one too, yeah.
Well, tell us, Shlomi, of all the work you've been doing over the years, what are you most proud of? What gives you the chills when you think about it?
The work that I'm most proud of is work that nobody will ever see, but the people this work was made for. A few years ago, I volunteered for an organization called Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep.
Oh.
Do you know that organization?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, so they do remembrance photography for parents who lost their babies either during pregnancy or right after. So that I did that for a little bit until I got to a point it got too difficult. But that is by far the most important work I've done in my life photographically.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. And, you know, those photos, I can never use them. I can never show anybody.
No.
But that's, you know, I can photograph a lot of cool things, but that's just on a different level of how important that is and what it means to people who hired me for that. It's actually volunteer, but still who asked me to do that. But that would be my answer. And it was very tough. And, you know, when I did that, I'm still a new, kind of a new dad because I have a 3.5-year-old and a 1-year-old, but back then I only had one kid and he was, I think, not even 2. So it was very, very difficult. But I'm glad I did it. It was an interesting experience and I was able to, you know, help people in that way.
We talk about shooting cool things and trying to get the, you know, decisive moment or whatever. But what are we doing with this to actually help make other people's lives better?
That's a big question, Bob.
I started doing something similar several years ago. I started photographing elderly people because I love their faces.
Yeah.
And I did it in nursing homes, senior centers. And then my mother-in-law was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and it was a really tough time. I couldn't do it. And I still have a hard time getting back to it, and I want to do it some more.
Hey, it's not easy to you know, because it's the one thing that it's just, first of all, I feel like it's a gift. What I did with Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep is a gift, but it's also so those situations, experiences are so tragic for people that it's just being a part of it, you know, that gives me the chills.
I think that's a beautiful work that you did. It's just hard to imagine the emotion that comes with that.
Yeah, and you know, the experiences themselves, you know, I'll tell you a little bit about one situation, obviously no names or anything, but there's a session that is called End of Life, and that's a situation where a baby's born with some issue, and they already know that they're going to have to, you know, pull the plugs. So they let the parents know, and, you know, it's obviously, you know, I was there photographing that. But it was the most difficult thing that I have done in my life because everybody was just crying. The nurses are crying. The doctor is crying. The parents are crying. I'm crying. I almost got like my camera almost got like, I don't even know. Like I'm surprised, like I didn't damage it. Like everybody is just crying when it happens, before it happens and after it happens. So you can just imagine, like, it's so extremely difficult to do that. So after a few times I did that, I I'm a strong person, but I just couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, how many times can you do that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's a beautiful way to use your talents, for sure.
It is.
Yeah, and it's important to me to, you know, to do those things, because, you know, if I can help people with, you know, in any way with what I do, is what else is there in life to do but, you know, like, make somebody happy and, like, just give.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I did have one more question for you.
Please.
I know that you talked about how you draw inspiration from others. Who inspires you the most, or who are some people or some photographers that really you draw from them in your own work?
Yeah. So, I mean, initially when I just, you know, really got into street photography in the early years, it was a lot of, you know, Magnum guys like Elliot Erwitt and Richard Calver and Joel Meyerowitz and all those guys. More recently, it's been, you know, I've very much inspired by photographers like Troy Holden and Siegfried Hansen and Matt Stewart. I'm a huge Matt Stewart fan. Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at all of these photographers, I think that one of the biggest, thing in common between all of them, there's just a lot of humor in their work. And I always enjoy that. So for me, it's something that I like to look at and also create. So, yeah.
So why don't you tell us where people can see more of your work?
On my website, it's www.shlomiamiga.com. If you go to Dumb Luck in the sidebar, and that's a series of street photography work that, you know, I've done over the years, and basically a lot of moments on the street that, you know, things came together in a very serendipitous way. So yeah, and also on my Instagram, if you go on Call Me Shlomi, you can find a lot of street photography, much more, you know, way more stuff than on my website, obviously, more day-to-day posts and street work.
Ah, so you have two Instagram accounts.
Oh, Bob, I have all the Instagram accounts. I have Instagram for my kids that is private, that family can go on. This street photography, this commercial work. I find that, you know, like, everybody always talks about, like, having a niche in your Instagram feed. And that confuses me, because I don't want to have a niche. I just want to throw everything in one spot. But apparently, it's not very good for you.
You would be great friends with my husband.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I was like, what is all this stuff? Why are there so many?
Right. So I'm forced into, you know, going to the niche route of things and have different accounts for different things that I do, just so I can satisfy the great Instagram audience. You know, I got a machine, right?
It is.
So, yeah.
It's insatiable.
But that's Call Me Shlomi is my street photography account. So you can go check it out there. Yeah.
Good. Well, we'll make sure to include a link in the article.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Well, Shlomi, thank you. Appreciate you taking the time, especially on a weekday in the morning like this. And just been great talking to you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And, you know, I'm really excited to, you know, keep following the website. You guys always post, you know, very inspirational material. So I'm a big fan.